Hello, and welcome to Learning English Weekend, the Sunday edition. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Here's what's ahead on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, correspondent Pete Musto tells us about a student from Peru whose family is Chinese. She is studying development practice at Emory University in Atlanta. The field of study tries to explain how economic development can help solve poverty and other issues around the world. Because the field is so new, only a few universities around the world offer a degree program for it. Pete's report is part of our new ongoing series about international student life at colleges and universities across the United States. Then, Ana Mateo will be with us, as she is every Sunday, with Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. This week, Ana will tell us about an expression that many speakers of American English use, the real McCoy. And, as we always do on the Sunday edition of Learning English Weekend, we will present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, we report on the early years of the 20th century, a time of movement for many black Americans. That movement, a century ago, has shaped the United States we live in today. So you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. Every day of the year, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And every Sunday, we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We are a little different here at VOA Learning English. Because we exist to help you learn everyday American English, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words that are easy to understand. Listen to the program. Then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the voice of America. Now, as we do every Sunday, we tell you what is happening in American higher education. Today's report is part of our new, ongoing series about international students who are studying at colleges and universities across the United States. This week, correspondent Pete Musto introduces us to a student from Peru whose family is Chinese, who is studying at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. At Emory, small classes and personalized support shape the international student experience.
Ruofei Chen's family is from China, and she grew up in Lima, Peru. She knew those parts of the world and studied for her undergraduate degree in Asia and Latin America. When Ruofei Chen chose to start a master's degree program in 2015, she says she wanted something really different. Ruofei Chen chose a new field of study called development practice. This field tries to explain how economic development can help solve poverty and other issues around the world. As this field is so new, only a few universities around the world offer a degree program for it. For Ruofei Chen, it has also meant new challenges. Because the U.S. is involved in development around the world, Ruofei Chen wanted to study at a U.S. university. She chose Emory University, a private research university just outside of Atlanta, Georgia. Founded by the Methodist Episcopal Church in 1836, the school is now home to over 14,700 students. The founders of the Coca-Cola Company helped build the current campus in 1914. When Ruofei Chen arrived at Emory, she had no idea what to expect. This caused some problems for her right away.
Grad school in U.S. can be really busy. Like really busy, depending on how much elective classes you are enrolled in.
Ruofei Chen studies in the hours between her classes, at night and on the weekends. She also has to make connections with people and work on group projects. She is also planning a trip to Nicaragua in the summer of 2016 to help prevent diseases that affect people in poverty. This is part of an Emory Global Health Institute project. All of this happens in English, which is not her native language. But Ruofei Chen has found that Emory wants her to succeed. For over 20 years, Emory's Laney Graduate School English Language Support Program has offered special English lessons. Once a week, Ruofei Chen meets one-on-one with Peggy Wagner, a teacher with the program. Together, they work on more than just English grammar or vocabulary. Wagner helps Ruofei Chen examine how her voice sounds and how to use the language in different ways.
What's really fun for me is how to find ways to engage and discussions in a more professional way so that they can let their intellect shine and really express the intent that they want.
Ruofei Chen has no regrets about her decision to come to Emory. She loves how personal her learning experience has been. But she does have some advice for international students considering a U.S. education. She says that U.S. universities provide lots of support for their students. But students must be willing to look for that support themselves. She also says students should learn as much as they can about a school before choosing to attend it.
Get to know the place before you come. It will help you to minimize the gap between your expectations and what you will actually find here.
I'm Pete Musto.
Thanks, Pete. Pete and I hope you'll join us every Sunday over the next several weeks as we bring you more stories about international students and their experiences at American colleges and universities. Now, if it's Sunday, it's time for Ana Mateo and Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. It tells about the origin and uses of popular words and expressions in American English. Today, Anna explains how to ask someone if what they are telling you or showing you is genuine.
Our expression today is the real McCoy. If a person tells you that something is the real McCoy, they are telling you that it is the real thing. It is not a copy or replacement. There is nothing false about the real McCoy. And not only is it the real thing, it is the best version that exists. As usual, word experts do not agree on how this expression came into common use. A popular belief is that it is connected to Charles Kidd McCoy, a famous boxer of the past. During the 1800s, he was a one-time world champion. His real name was Norman Selby. Word historians also cannot agree on which Selby story is the origin of the real McCoy. One explanation goes like this. McCoy was having a drink in a bar with a woman friend. As the story goes, a man at the bar insulted McCoy by calling him a liar. He said he was not the famous prize fighter. So, McCoy knocked him out with one hit. When the man came to his senses, he called out, "That was the real McCoy." The second version of the Kidd McCoy story is much less flattering to the boxer. McCoy was accused of throwing many fights. To throw a fight means to lose on purpose for money. So, sports writers would ask, who is going to show up for the boxing match, the boxer who throws the fight or the real McCoy? However, there are other explanations for the real McCoy. One story takes us back to the days of Prohibition in the United States. During this time, it was illegal to sell alcohol. That, however, did not stop people from selling it. And many people sold low-quality alcohol. As this story goes, there was one dealer who was honest. His name was Bill, you guessed it, McCoy. He refused to sell bad alcohol. Over time, his product became recognized as the best. It was called the Real McCoy. The expression made it through the days of Prohibition and soon became a general term. But not so fast. Yet another possible explanation is from Canada. Canadian inventor Elijah McCoy made a successful machine for keeping train engines running smoothly. He patented his design in 1872, but that did not stop others from copying it. These copies were all inferior, or not as good. So railroad engineers would request the patented design by name. They wanted the real McCoy system for their trains. Similar expressions include the real deal and the genuine article. The adjective honest to goodness means the same thing. Now let's hear these expressions used in a short dialogue.
Wow, is your computer the new Banana Book Pro 5000?
You bet it is. It is the real McCoy. And it should be. I paid enough for it.
I'm afraid to ask. But how much did it cost?
More than $2,000.
Ooh, that is a lot of money. But, like you said, it's the genuine article.
Yep. You get what you pay for. There are many copies out there, so you have to be careful.
Absolutely. The only way to really buy the Banana Book Pro is at the banana store. That is where you bought it, isn't it?
No. I bought it from a guy selling them out of his car. But he promised that it was an honest-to-goodness Banana Book Pro. He showed me the paperwork and everything.
Well, then, I'm sure it's the real deal. Do you mind if I see the... Sorry, the logo just fell off. It's a good thing you have the paperwork.
From The Real McCoy of English Learning Media, I'm Anna Mateo.
Thanks, Anna. Now, as we do every Sunday, we present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, we take you back to the early years of the 20th century, a time of movement for many black Americans. Traditionally, most blacks lived in the southeastern states. But in the 1920s, many blacks moved to cities in the north. Black Americans moved because living conditions were so poor in the rural areas of the southeast. But many of them discovered that life was also hard in the colder northern cities. Jobs often were hard to find. Housing was poor, and whites sometimes acted violently against them. This week in our series, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell us about the life of black Americans in the 1920s.
The years just before and after 1920 were difficult for blacks. It was a time of racial hatred. Many whites joined the Ku Klux Klan organization. The Klan often terrorized blacks. Klan members sometimes burned fiery crosses in front of the houses of black families, and they sometimes beat and murdered blacks. The Ku Klux Klan also acted against Roman Catholics, Jews, and foreigners, but it hated blacks most of all.
The United States also suffered a series of race riots in a number of cities during this period. White and black Americans fought each other in Omaha, Philadelphia, and other cities. The worst riot was in Chicago. A swimming incident started the violence. A black boy sailing a small boat entered a part of the beach used by white swimmers. Some white persons threw stones at the boy. He fell into the water and drowned. Black citizens heard about the incident and became extremely angry. Soon, black and white mobs were fighting each other in the streets. The violence lasted for 2 weeks. 38 persons died. More than 500 were wounded. The homes of hundreds of families were burned. The violence in Chicago and other cities did not stop black Americans from moving north or west. They felt that life had to be better than in the South.
Black Americans left the South because life was hard, economic chances few, and white hatred common. But many blacks arrived in other parts of the country only to learn that life was no easier. Some blacks wrote later that they had only traded the open racism of the rural Southeast for the more secret racism of northern cities. Blacks responded to these conditions in different ways. Some blacks followed the ideas of Booker T. Washington, the popular black leader of the early 1900s. Washington believed that blacks had to educate and prepare themselves to survive in American society. He helped form a number of training schools where blacks could learn skills for better jobs, and he urged blacks to establish businesses and improve themselves without causing trouble with whites. Other blacks liked the stronger ideas of William Du Bois. Du Bois felt that blacks had to take firm actions to protest murders and other illegal actions. He published a magazine and spoke actively for new laws and policies to protect black rights. Du Bois also helped form a group that later became the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. The NAACP became one of the nation's leading black rights organizations in the 20th century.
probably the most important leader for black Americans in the 1920s, did not come from the United States. He was Marcus Garvey from the Caribbean island of Jamaica. Garvey moved to New York City in 1916. He quickly began organizing groups in black areas. His message was simple. He said blacks should not trust whites. Instead, they should be proud of being black and should help each other. Garvey urged blacks to leave the United States, move to Africa, and start their own nation. Marcus Garvey organized several plans to help blacks become economically independent of whites. His biggest effort was a shipping company to trade goods among black people all over the world. Many American blacks gave small amounts of money each week to help Garvey start the shipping company. However, the idea failed. Government officials arrested Garvey for collecting the money unlawfully. They sent him to prison in 1925. And 2 years later, President Coolidge ordered Garvey out of the country. Marcus Garvey's group was the first major black organization in the United States to gain active support from a large number of people. The organization failed, but it did show the anger and lack of hope that many blacks felt about their place in American society.
That's why my sugar is
so... Blacks also showed their feelings through writing, art, and music. The 1920s were one of the most imaginative periods in the history of American black art. Claude McKay, Langston Hughes, and County Cullen were three of the leading black poets during this time. McKay was best known for his poems of social protest. Hughes produced poems about black life that experts now say are among the greatest American poems ever written. Black writers also produced longer works. Among the leading black novelists were Jesse Fawcett, Gene Toomer, and Rudolph Fisher.
The 1920s also were an exciting time for black music. Black musicians playing the piano developed the ragtime style of music. Singers and musicians produced a sad, emotional style of playing that became known as the blues. And most important, music lovers began to play and enjoy a new style that was becoming known as jazz. Jazz advanced greatly as a true American kind of music in the 1920s. Musicians Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, and Ubi Blake played in gathering places and small theaters. White musicians and music experts from universities came to listen. Soon, the music became popular among Americans of all kinds and around the world.
Blacks began to recognize in the 1920s their own deep roots in the United States. They began to see just how much black men and women already had done to help form American history and traditions. The person who did the most to help blacks understand this was black historian Carter G. Woodson. Woodson received his training at two leading universities, Harvard in Massachusetts and the Sorbonne in France. he launched a new publication, the Journal of Negro History, in which he and other experts wrote about black life and history. Historians today call Woodson the father of the scientific study of black history.
The 1920s were also a time when many blacks experimented with new political ideas and parties. The difficult social conditions of the period led many to search for new political solutions. Two leftist parties, the Socialists and the Communists, urged blacks to leave the traditional political system and work for more extreme change. Two leading black socialists, Chandler Owen and A. Philip Randolph, urged blacks to support socialist candidates. However, they gained little support from blacks. Communists also tried to organize black workers. But generally, black voters showed little interest in communist ideas. The most important change in black political thinking during the 1920s came within the traditional two-party system itself. Most blacks had voted for Republicans since the days of Abraham Lincoln. But the conservative Republican policies of the 1920s caused many blacks to become Democrats. By 1932, blacks would vote by a large majority for the Democratic presidential candidate, Franklin Roosevelt. Today, blacks continue to be a major force in the Democratic Party. Next week on The Making of a Nation, we will tell the story of the presidential election of 1924. Calvin Coolidge had been president for only a year after the death of President Warren Harding. Coolidge quickly gained the trust of most Americans by investigating the crimes of Harding's top officials. The conservative economic policies of the new president also won wide support. But would they win him the White House for a term of his own? We will tell that story on our Making of a Nation program next week on Learning English Weekend, the Sunday edition. You can find the entire Making of a Nation series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and images at learningenglish.voanews.com. While you are visiting our website, you can also read and listen to longer versions of the stories that you have just heard on this program. We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email. Our address is learningenglish@voanews.com. That's learningenglish@voanews.com. We read every single message you send us. Well, that's Learning English Weekend, the Sunday edition. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz reporting from Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. Jonathan Evans will be here tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with As It Is Monday, the weekday Learning English broadcast, webcast, and podcast from The Voice of America.